This is Radio EcoShock with your host, Alex Smith.
Here comes the catastrophe scene. So says one of Australia's most experienced science journalists, Julian Cribb. Julian was science editor for the country's only national daily newspaper, The Australian. He wins awards and helps top agencies communicate science. Cribb is co-founder of the nonprofit Council for the Human Future. He is author of the book Surviving the 21st Century, Humanity's 10 Great Challenges and How We Can Overcome Them. Julian Cribb, a warm welcome to Radio EcoShock.
Thank you, Alex.
All right, let's start with the obvious. What is the catastrophe scene?
Well, as everybody knows, we're in the Anthropocene now, which is the age in which humans are making a geological impact on the Earth. We're changing the climate, we're changing the composition of the oceans, we're changing the whole of the landmass and things like that. But that's going to be a very short-lived geological period, probably only a century or two. We are now entering an age when the catastrophes that have been building up in the background are going to be triggered one by one. As we run out of water, we run out of topsoil, we unleash all sorts of dangerous chemicals all over the planet, which are changing the ability of the Earth to support human and other life.
Yes, and for years you toiled over, quote, the self-inflicted existential emergency faced by humanity. You wrote 6 books, published over 8,000 articles, and edited even more than that. But your conclusion is a bit hard to hear. It's hard to grasp, too. If we face a lot of very dangerous threats, why not just pick the top 3 and just concentrate on them?
Because you'll be taken out by all the others, which you've ignored, basically. But the point is, you cannot separate them. They are all interconnected. Let me go back a little bit and explain to you how I came by this. I mean, I'm a science writer, a science journalist, and I've been reporting science for going on 45 years now. Basically, in speaking to the 10,000-odd scientists that I've spoken to, around about the 1990s, I started meeting more and more depressed scientists, scientists who were going out and gathering data. And the data that they were collecting was showing them that the world was going to hell in a handcart. And, they were bringing this back to the laboratory or the office and analyzing it and finding it really, really disturbing, because other people were not aware of this, governments were not aware of it, they were not interested in it, they weren't taking any action on it. So these scientists were getting pretty alarmed and pretty depressed. And this is 25 years ago I'm talking. Now, as a journalist, I thought, are they right to be depressed? I mean, are we really on a course set for disaster? So I thought, well, the easy way for a journalist to answer that question is to go and talk to the best scientists in the world, or read their writings, their publications, their scientific literature. And that's what I did. Since about 2008, I have been talking to top scientists and top institutions around the world and asking them what the data is showing. I'm asking them for their opinions. I'm asking them what their data is showing about the state of the world and the chances that humanity is going to survive. And it's a pretty grim picture. And it's not just about climate change. Climate gets all the headlines, all the focus. But there are 9 other mega threats that are just as bad in each in its way as climate change. All of them are capable of a catastrophic impact on the whole of humanity. Some of them are capable of wiping out humanity altogether. And we have to do something about it. But when you scrape away all the detail and things like that, and you ask yourself, what is causing all these threats? The simple answer is overpopulation. We've got far too many people using far too much stuff and releasing far too much contamination or pollution around the planet. So it's overpopulation, overconsumption, and overpollution. Those 3 things are the drivers of the 10 mega threats.
Okay, so for our listeners, we should at least say what those 10 threats are, and I thought maybe we could begin with the first 4. You've got eco-collapse, overheating, toxic poisons, and nuclear holocaust. Do you want to say a few words about each and why they fit into your top 10 list of threats to the human race?
Yes, the first one is extinction, right? We've now got a rate of extinction that is running faster than the time when the dinosaurs got wiped out, believe it or not. That's what the science is saying at the moment. Somewhere between 1,000 and 10,000 times the normal background rate of extinction. So we're wiping out species like almost no other period in the Earth's history. This could be the worst or the second worst extinction event in the whole Earth history if we allow it to continue. Now, you know, people don't worry whether an ant or a fly or something like that goes extinct. But the bottom line is that the ecosystem that supports us is what is being wiped out. Now, many people are aware that we're destroying honeybees worldwide. Probably the chemicals that we've released are killing off the honeybees. So, you know, if we lose honeybees, we lose about a third of the world's food, because about a third of the world's food requires pollination by bees and other insects. So, you know, if you wipe out the insects, you actually wipe out your own food supply. And that's an example of how if we destroy the environment that supports us, at the end of the day, we cannot survive ourselves. So there will be no food supplied to our gigantic cities. No city on Earth can feed itself, so they are all going to be equally vulnerable to this huge impact that we're having on extinction and ecocide, which is the destruction of the ecosystem. That was the first one. The second one you mentioned is climate. Well, we've got COP27 coming up. Basically, the world is going to meet again and shake its head about the state of the climate. We are on track now for 2 degrees of global warming. Now, 2 degrees doesn't sound very much, you know, 2 degrees hotter on one day as opposed to another. That's not the issue. The issue is that when you put more energy into the atmosphere, the climate becomes much more choppy. It flips and flops from drought to flood, to drought to flood to storm. You know, all of these changes happen much more quickly, and they're much more energetic. And that means they're doing much more damage to things like the food supply and to transport and things like that and, you know, people's houses. So the destruction, particularly of food, but also of human infrastructure, is going to increase as we get to 2 degrees. And at 3 degrees, you're getting to the stage where you probably cannot grow grain. You know, the world's grain supply will more or less vanish towards the end of the century if the world keeps on heating at the current rates. So it's just a question of whether we keep on pumping carbon into the atmosphere and heating up the Earth to do that and stirring up this enormous engine, which is our climate, or whether we back off. That's the second one. The third one is the poisoning of the world. Now, most people are unaware of this, but we are releasing over 200 billion tons of chemicals. And those chemicals, those 350,000 man-made chemicals, that we're also releasing a lot of chemicals when we mine things and when we farm and when we manufacture things, you know, we throw out huge amounts of pollution. So there's a phenomenal production of pollution going on at the moment. And this is poisoning not only ourselves, it's poisoning every human being on Earth as I speak. Okay, there's not a single person who is immune to this. Every child is getting brain damaged as far back as their time in the womb at the moment, because of all the industrial chemicals that we've released that are in our environment now. Now, the World Health Organization says that there are 13.7 million people dying every single year due to chemicals in the human environment. Now, that is around about a quarter of all deaths on Earth. This is the biggest act of preventable homicide that has ever taken place in human history. I mean, it is double the impact of World War II. If you will, but people don't acknowledge it. Governments don't acknowledge it. Nothing coherent is being done to stop it. So global poisoning is another major issue. Now, of course, Vladimir Putin has reawakened the specter of nuclear war like nothing on Earth. We're probably about 10 seconds to midnight as we speak at the moment, because it's quite likely that something will go wrong, that nukes will get thrown around in Europe, and then it's out of control. You know, you just simply do not know where it is going to go once nuclear weapons start being used. And people overreact and they fire on the suspicion rather than, you know, on knowledge. You know, then the world can end up in a nuclear disaster. And, of course, a nuclear disaster along with a climate disaster are the two most likely ways by which humanity would become extinct. So that's the first four of these things, but they're all integrated, in that they are all a result of our huge numbers, our population explosion, and our demands on the Earth system.
Yes, those are your next big three threats, the resource scarcity, pandemics, which we haven't talked about, but I don't think we need to talk about. Everybody knows what's happening with that right now.
I don't think they do, actually.
No? What would you say about the pandemics?
Well, I would say that we've had seven pandemics since the year 2000, and we're still running an AIDS pandemic, which began back in the 1970s. So, you know, pandemics are going to increase rather than decrease. Pandemics are caused by human overpopulation, by humans traveling too much, by humans exchanging diseases in these very densely packed cities and institutions. So we're not understanding the causes of these things at the moment. So we might be focused on COVID, but COVID is probably a fairly mild kind of pandemic compared to what is coming down. We keep on knocking over rainforests. Viruses which have to survive will come out of those rainforests and out of the animals that we're destroying, and they will take refuge in humans and cause fresh pandemics. There have been 90 animal diseases transferred from wild animals to humans in the last half century. Okay, 90. Now, not all of them ended up as pandemics. Not all of them even ended up as major diseases. But that's giving you some idea of the rate at which new diseases are entering the human species. And on top of that, we've got all these scientists doing very dangerous things in laboratories, like pepping up, taking wild viruses and making them even more deadly. And that's just crazy science. It should not be allowed.
Your last three threats are famine, ultra-technologies, and misinformation. What do you mean by ultra-technologies, Julian?
Well, artificial intelligence is an ultra-technology, nanotechnology. These are technologies which are super powerful, basically. They can have absolutely massive effects on the human future, both positive and negative. At the moment, people are pushing these technologies out there, and there is no control over the negative effects. So, for example, artificial intelligence is leading us to a place where every single human being is surveillance for the whole of their life, from birth to death, and I don't think that's a very desirable thing from the point of view of human freedom. But robot killers, you've got robotic nuclear weapons now. I mean, what could possibly go wrong with that? You've got nanotechnology where they're releasing tiny, tiny chemicals into the environment that can never be called back, and we do not know what their effect is on human health, but we know from previous experience with chemistry that they kill an awful lot of people. But we're keeping on pumping out these things. So these are examples of new technologies that are completely uncontrolled by society. You know, they're being pushed out by universities and corporations, but society is having no say. There is no precaution being taken against a bad outcome from any of these technologies. Now, if I may use an example, coal was a very beneficial technology in the 19th century when it was used to power industry. But through overuse and overpollution, it has become a technology that is destroying our world. So that's an example of how a benign technology can turn into a malignant technology just simply through overuse. So we want to avoid that. Now, may I refer back to the previous list that you ran by? We mentioned briefly about resource scarcity. The world is running out of water. The world is running out of topsoil. We've lost half our topsoil, our farmlands, in the last 50 to 70 years. We can't go on growing food if we run out of water and soil. So we have to reinvent completely the way we produce food. So, you know, resource scarcity, when we think about resources, we talk about things like coal or lithium or something like that. But in actual fact, water, forests, fish, soil, these are resources without which human life cannot exist. And if we keep on destroying them at this rate, then human life can't exist.
And your last big threat, misinformation, may be the one that actually does us in. I mean, once people's ears are closed to science or to mere facts, it's possible truth just can't get through and we all go down because of that.
Well, that is the problem, that we just love telling lies to ourselves. And unfortunately, there are large groups such as the fossil fuels lobby that have actually made a profession out of telling lies to people about the danger of fossil fuels. They're out there trying to confuse the political debate and the media debate so that nobody knows what's going on with climate change. They're just trying to extend the period of which they can make profits out of fossil fuels. But they're using these lie factories to penetrate at election time and things like that. All of our democratic debate is being contaminated by these things. So what they're actually doing is disabling government. They are making democracy, fouling up the wheels of democracy so it doesn't work any longer. And this applies in autocracies as well. You know, you can contaminate an autocracy with false information, and frequently they are contaminated with false information. Russia might be an example of that. Basically, false information means that you don't know what to do. Society becomes paralyzed. It's unable to act on the threats. So the misinformation deluge, this avalanche of lies and falsehoods and half-truths and fake news that is coming forth at the moment for people's own personal political advantage is actually destroying our ability as a society to govern ourselves, to make sound, sensible decisions about the future. So, yes, misinformation could be the thing that actually does us in.
This is a climate emergency. Find out more on the blog, ecoshock.org. No sign up, just the latest info, free for all. ecoshock.org.
You are tuned to Radio EcoShock. I'm Alex. My guest is Australian author and science journalist Julian Cribb. Julian, last spring you warned humanity could be, quote, sinking into a stagnant ocean. What do you mean by that?
Well, this is an area that has gone really under the radar. People haven't noticed. But if you wind the clock back about 200 or 300 million years, there was an event called the Great Dying or the Great Death in the Permian, when 96% of the Earth's species just went extinct. It was a period of terrible pollution, and it turns out that was started, really, by nutrients flushing into the sea and causing vast blooms of algae. And as the planet warmed, the ocean currents failed, and so the ocean stopped circulating, and the top level of the water remained rich in oxygen, but the bottom levels became anoxic. All life living in those layers of water just simply died. It could not survive, as indeed is happening in many places in the dead zones, the 760 dead zones that are occurring around the world at the moment. So as we flush nutrients into the water, they go on to become the fossil fuels of the future. They sink to the bottom. They produce these enormous blooms of microorganisms, which bloom and then die and form great patches of sludge on the seabed. And those are the fossil fuels of the future, which we are actually we're liberating the fossil fuels of the past and burning them and heating the world. But this heating effect is going to cause the breakdown of the ocean currents and the stratification of the oceans. It's a complicated argument, but we could actually unleash, if we take it far enough, humans could so contaminate the world that nothing on it but bacteria can survive. That was the case for the first 2 billion years of life on Earth. For the first 2 billion years, only bacteria could survive. And then about 700 million years ago, multi-celled organisms came into being. So, if we really screw the place up badly, it can go back to that cradle Earth situation where only bugs can make it.
And then this past summer, you wrote the 10 catastrophic risks we just talked about can only be solved if women assume leadership everywhere in business, in politics, and religion. And if that's true, and I don't disagree, it sounds like we are really doomed because all of those fields, religions especially, they specialize in protecting and projecting male power. Do you really hope that can be changed?
Women have really got the wind under their tail at the moment. They're reaching out, they're rising into positions of power and prominence like nobody would ever have expected, even in some very unlikely parts of the world. But it's a huge obstacle that they have to overcome. Male patriarchy and male power have been the dominant paradigm of most societies through most of history. But let me explain why I say that women need to be the leaders of the future. First of all, if you study history, there are almost no examples of women starting wars. Almost all wars are started by men, whether it's male governments, male monarchies, male dictatorships, male war leaders or tribal leaders, whatever. Nearly always wars begin with men wanting to be the masculine warrior types that they believe themselves to be. Now, all right, in medieval times or in Stone Age times, you needed men to fight. It was a necessary thing. But nowadays, when human survival is right on the boundary, you don't need those kind of skills. We don't need mass killers in charge of the world any longer. We need peacemakers in charge of the world. We need nurturers in charge of the world. We need people who think about the grandchildren in charge of the world, and those are women. And when I looked at who was doing the damage to the world, you know, I started off with chemistry, and I looked at all the boards of the big chemical companies, and I looked at the composition of the chemistry departments in universities and things like that. It's 90% male-dominated. Right, so chemistry is a result of male groupthink. Modern chemistry is the result of men solving the problems in this kind of crazy, let's just fix it, you know, and the devil take the consequences attitude that men have. You can apply that to forestry. All of these industries are dominated by men. The cut down, the mining industry is dominated by men. Agriculture is dominated by men. Men have a very destructive mentality.
My problem with your work is how the public, how the rest of us can imagine these 10 threats all at once. We don't do well with multiple things like that. Do you have a name for this beast, for this matrix or complex?
Yeah, well, basically what we're talking about human survival. And we are, at the Council for the Human Future, we're working on a thing called the Human Survival Index, which is a simple index that will tell us where our humans are today, closer to survival or closer to disaster than we were yesterday. So it actually measures all 10 of these factors using scientific metrics, but it combines them into a single number that tells you whether we are more at risk or less at risk as a result of our combined actions. Basically, we're talking about survival of our civilization, first of all, because that's the first thing that's going to go down. And secondly, we're talking about survival of our species. That, I think, most people can understand. They may not understand the intricacies of climate change or chemical pollution or resource scarcity or something like that. It doesn't matter. What they need to know is that we are more in danger or we are less in danger. We are doing the right thing or we are doing the wrong thing.
You know, I was thinking of an image that would project it, and what came into my mind was actually the Hindu image of the deity Shiva, known as the Destroyer, and some statues of Shiva show him or her with 10 arms, like the 10 forces that we need to overcome. But of course, we can't culturally appropriate a symbol that's divine to countless of millions of people. But I'm hoping eventually for some sort of picture, some way to immediately imprint that there are 10 things that we have to look after even at once or we don't survive.
Yeah, well, we've already got things like the Doomsday Clock and the Global Footprint Network. They already provide us with graphic images for resource scarcity or the nuclear threat. But what we're going to do is come up with a similar graphic image. It can appear on the news every night. It can appear in your iPhone, in your Twitter feed, on your Facebook feed, whatever, you know, and tell you where we're at. And let's face it, everybody in the world is going to be online before the end of this decade, right? So it will be possible to communicate with every human being on Earth before 2030. That's the rate at which the internet is spreading. So it's possible to get this information into people's hands so that they know that there is a need for action. Now, as to what the action is that you can take, well, I've got a new book coming out, if you don't mind me mentioning this. It's called How to Fix a Broken Planet. It's coming out in January of 2023, and it describes exactly what we have to do, what the scientists are saying we have to do to overcome all 10 of these threats. But more particularly, it describes what each of us can do in our own lives if we want to mitigate those threats to ourselves and to our children and grandchildren.
I'm looking forward to that book. What was the title again?
How to Fix a Broken Planet.
To me, there are two favored responses by humans when we face a great danger. We can try to go back to a past where we know we survived, or we can try some sort of clean break, a revolution into new ways of life. Which does your book prefer, or which do you see as most likely?
My book takes the optimistic point of view, and it suggests that to avoid hopelessness, we need to take action. The antidote to hopelessness is action. Do something, you know, do something for yourself. Start growing your own vegetables. Stop traveling, you know, do something to clean up the world in some way. Minimize your chemical environment. Do all those kinds of things. If you ask me, I think that humans have got the brains and the technologies to solve all of these problems, but we do not have the institutions. You know, we don't have the corporations. We don't have the governments who are able to solve these particular problems. So that's the difficulty that we're in at the moment. We're paralyzed by our leadership and by our economic system. They obviously have to change. Now, personally, I doubt that they're going to change short of a disaster. And I noticed that the United Nations, in its Global Risks Report, which came out this year, is talking about civilizational collapse. That's the first time that anybody in authority has really dared breathe those words. They are warning that we are at risk of collapsing our entire civilization, not just our economy, but our entire civilization, all the infrastructure, all our schools, hospitals, travel, transport, monetary system, you name it. If that goes down, you know, when we're in an awful lot of trouble. The question is, can we do enough to actually prevent that happening? And I'm open-minded on that at the moment.
I get the feeling you're one of those minds who never really retires. You can't let it go or stop trying. Is that you?
I'm a grandfather, and having learned what I've learned from the 10,000-odd scientists that I've spoken to, I feel obligated to share that knowledge with the world in general in order to help them to understand what is going on, to help them see what the scientists are seeing about the danger that we're in for the sake of those grandkids. That's what's been motivating. That's why I've written 6 books on this topic and backed them up with something like over 2,000 scientific citations to actually demonstrate to people that this has been thoroughly researched and it's been thoroughly checked. This information is not, you know, somebody's opinion. This information is stuff that's been checked and checked and rechecked by thousands of scientists around the world. And it's absolutely dinkum, as we say in Australia. It's for real.
From Canberra, Australia, we've been speaking with author, editor, and longtime science journalist Julian Cribb. You can find links to the stories we talked about, including articles and a video by Julian, in my show blog at ecoshock.org. Julian Cribb, thank you so much for spending time with us on Radio EcoShock.
Thank you very much, Alex.
I'm Alex Smith reporting. That's it for this show. Check out all our past programs free at ecoshock.org. Thank you for listening, and let's meet up again next week.